Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, August 19th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Idaho Governor Brad Little appoints new state Supreme Court Justice, Pullman School Board under state scrutiny for open meeting law compliance, and Center for Biological Diversity petitions U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to protect diminishing Central Washington Jacob's Ladder flowering plant. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Firefighters and air crews are on the scene trying to knock down a new wildfire on the Snake River Breaks west of Pullman near Blyton Landing. Someone reported the fire this afternoon. Whitman County Fire District 14 Chief Nick Bell told the Lewiston Tribune website the fire has nearly reached a farm at the top of the Snake River Canyon. A third-party investigation into the Pullman School Board's February meeting has found evidence of possible Open Public Meetings Act violations and possible Public Records Act violations. Public commenters told the board about the policy violations earlier this year, and Board President Aaron Carter asked Clear Risk Solutions of EFRADA to investigate the board's actions surrounding a 3-2 February vote against a proposal to extend the date of Superintendent Bob Maxwell's contract lapse to 2028. Maxwell told the Daily News the district did not pay extra for the investigation and that the district's insurance pool provided the investigation as a regular service. Members of the public took the results of the Clear Risk Solutions investigation to the Washington Attorney General's Open Government Ombudsman. The Clear Risk Investigator found Board Chair Carter called for a vote on Maxwell's contract extension without public discussion. That was an apparent violation of Robert's Rules of Order, which the board uses as its guide for meetings. Clear Risk says Carter told them he forgot to ask for discussion of the motion. The Clear Risk investigation also found board members were confused about whether or not Maxwell's mid-year evaluation should inform the vote on contract extensions. Idaho Governor Brad Little has appointed 4th District Judge Jason Scott to the state Supreme Court. Scott will take over the Supreme Court seat currently held by Justice Richard Bevin, who is retiring October 30th. Bevin is also stepping down as Chief Justice. Jason Scott graduated from Duke University's School of Law in 1997 and has spent 15 years working for the Hawley Troxall Law Firm in Boise, 7 of those years as a partner in the firm. He received his bachelor's degree from Idaho State University. Scott's legal practice specialized in civil litigation. Governor Little wrote in a statement, "Judge Scott has dedicated his career to the law and to serving the people of Idaho. His experience as a practicing attorney and a district judge gives him a strong understanding of both the courtroom and the broader legal system. I am confident he will bring thoughtful judgment, a strong work ethic, and a deep commitment to the rule of law to the Idaho Supreme Court." The Idaho Capital Sun reports as a 4th District judge, Scott presided over high-profile lawsuits, including a legal challenge to the state's strict abortion ban and an open meetings lawsuit over the University of Idaho's attempted purchase of the University of Phoenix. Scott said, "For 12 years, I've given my all to serving the people of Idaho as a district judge. I'm grateful to Governor Little for entrusting me with the opportunity to continue in public service as a justice of the Idaho Supreme Court. I will always perform the duties of the office to the best of my ability, and I look forward to collaborating with my new colleagues on the court to decide cases with the utmost care and fidelity to the law." You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is sponsored by Mikey's Euros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine. such as gyros, falafel, hummus, and tabbouleh, located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.
KRFP is also sponsored by
Hodgins Drug and Hobby of 307 South Main Street in Moscow. Hodgins features a pharmacy, educational toys, and hobbies. Hodgins also sells and services hearing aids. You can call Hodgins at 208-882-5536. KRFP supports progressive values, including multiculturalism and environmentalism.
Don't touch that dial. You got it right.
We're up in the morning when it first gets light, and we do it all day. Then we're up all night so you can listen to the radio.
You got it right.
You can listen to the radio.
Listen, anytime you listen, everybody's on a mission, and there ain't nothing missing when you listen to the radio.
Radio,
you got it right.
Community radio. Listen, you give a little, listen to the radio.
Radio Free Moscow. Fight back radio. It's 90.3 on your radio dial. Fight back.
Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for your support. So keep on listening and listening and listening.
Fight back.
We're still here.
Radio.
Fight
back. Fight
back.
Immigrant rights groups in Washington are urging Governor Bob Ferguson to use emergency funds to preserve health care for foreign-born families, including legally protected refugees and asylees who are facing federal Medicaid cuts. On October 1st, 15,000 immigrants in the state will lose coverage under the Trump administration's massive budget bill known as H.R. 1. Ukrainian refugee Liliana Chernova works as a caregiver for her daughter and mother-in-law, who has stage 4 cancer, and calls the cuts a human catastrophe. Here she is speaking through an interpreter.
I'm just asking you to protect us, not deprive us from medical insurance. Let us live in human conditions, not to deprive our clients from medical insurance. They are needing it very, very much.
Service Employees International Union Local 775 represents more than 60,000 long-term care workers, about a third of which are immigrants. They say state leaders budgeted last session to protect affected residents, but now federal cuts are deeper and coming faster than expected, and legislators need to do more. Washington State is facing a multi-billion-dollar budget shortfall for the upcoming biennium. Chernova says she is grateful that people in Washington have been kind and welcoming to her, her husband, and their 9 children since they came to the U.S. in 2022. She says she has already had to flee her home twice with her family before coming to this country and hopes to live a normal life.
I would like to tell our legislators that I respect them very much. They do great work, but we also, as immigrants, make a big contribution into American society.
SEIU 775 is circulating a petition calling on state leaders to save health care for all of Washington's immigrant communities. The Washington State Department of Social and Health Services reports covering federal cuts to Medicaid would cost the state about $70 million. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
The Moscow City Council passed its fiscal year 2027 budget, just shy of $150 million, which includes the maximum 3% tax levy increase allowed by state law. During a public hearing on the budget, 12 people spoke against it, saying the $796,000 budgeted for the East City Park stage and various art projects would hurt the safety of the city. Here's former Moscow City Council candidate John Slagboom.
Inadequate funding to properly maintain the city streets. The same budget cuts the roadway improvement program by 55%, from $3 million to around $1.3 million. People are paying twice for streets. They pay their property taxes, and then they pay hospital bills and repair bills that the potholes create.
Slagboom ran for city council last year on a platform of small government, equal representation, fiscal responsibility, and affordable housing. In a column in the Idaho Statesman after the election, Slagboom said he was smeared in the press, quote, because the broad appeal of my message also resonated with many independents and conservatives, and because members of Doug Wilson's Christ Church tend towards conservatism. I was labeled as a kirker and accused of all sorts of imaginary offenses. Slag Boom received a $1,000 campaign contribution from Christ Church elder Andrew Krapachets of Moscow, who owns the 235-acre Eddington Addition parcel south of the city, and who was one of three Christ Church-connected purchasers who purchased the three-story David's building at the corner of 3rd and South Main Streets in Moscow, which is currently under development. Besides Krapachets, the other partners in the purchase are Pastor Doug Wilson's son, Nate Wilson, and Aaron Wrench, the brother of Christchurch Deacon Gabriel Wrench, who ran for Latah County Commission as a Republican in 2020. Slag Boom's other campaign contributions, over $500, were from local film director Graham Wilson and Jeff Mao, both of Moscow, who each gave $1,000. Since his election, Slag Boom has focused his criticism of the city council on their support for the East City Park stage. Here's Slag Boom during last night's city budget public hearing, followed by another opponent of the budget, Rachel Tavella.
The East City Park stage is not on the priority list or on the capital improvement list or in the mayor's budget address. Yet this budget funds it at almost $800,000. That one stage equals 58.7% of the entire road program. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm in favor of having a community stage. What I'm not in favor of is wasteful and flagrant government spending. As I'm aware, a licensed, bonded, and insured contractor offered to donate and install all the stage's concrete to engineering specifications at no cost to the city. I've heard that offer was never answered, and it never reached this council. The city's own 249-page bid package has no way to accept donated work. Volunteers built the last stage and repaired it after 2009 arson, and if we have to build a new stage, which we do, I volunteer my own time to coordinate the volunteers and sponsors who will get it built.
Now, we've heard about the minus three police positions, you know, lack of available funding, this and that, we're not going to do it. You guys have approved 1% for art every year. That's a police officer and a half, because you are prioritizing aesthetics over public safety. Like, I understand that overtime is cheap in the short run, but the God forbid a tired, cranky cop makes a bad call. That's not what we need. We need less murals, which could be donated, and we need police. You know, all of us in Moscow can be assured, you know, we love no kings, right? And yet you guys sit here like a giant board of kings, not acknowledging what we say or caring at all. You're like Prince John with the property taxes. The stage, that's a boob job when you need to pay a mortgage and the roof is falling in. So I would encourage you to look and see what has to be done now, what is frivolous, and what is just aesthetics and entertainment, and what can be donated, because we of the city of Moscow would love to do that if you would let us. Thank you.
That was Rachel Tavella, preceded by John Slagboom. New St. Andrews College student and Marine veteran Joshua David Krushevich, who has lived in Moscow for about a year, also took aim at the East City Park stage.
Fire department student resident program being underfunded doesn't sound very reassuring to me, considering that Washington and Oregon this summer was burning a lot. And we all had the smoke in our lungs and probably in our houses too, up until about a couple of days ago when that rain from God came down and washed all of the smoke away. So Idaho didn't burn, but Washington and Oregon did, and the Canadians as well, but one might say that that was deserved. So per the budget plan challenges, Moscow is already hurting for medical and ER personnel. Now, the reason stated was that there was not enough money to fund these programs and to fill those positions at the city level. And so, as others have noted, building a stage that costs $796,000, which, Mayor Lewis, you did specify that this is an estimate for the city budget. And so there's a bid that will come down, which will finalize the price number. I actually don't really care that there's not a set number. In my opinion, anything is too much when you have essential medical and fire programs which aren't being funded. Not only that, but property tax is being raised by the maximum 3%.
Two of the people who spoke in favor of the proposed budget were Victoria Sievert and David Pimentel. Pimentel lives adjacent to East City Park.
While it seems to be human nature to blame a handy target for a shrinking pocketbook, we can't expect grocers to sell at a loss or doctors to work free or cities to do it all on a tight budget, which the minimal allowed 3% increase won't even keep up with inflation. And city services are not just patching streets and flushing toilets if it's a city worth calling home. A city is function and community. A budget is more than divvying up dollars. Per usual, for my at least 10th time, I attended the annual budget workshop, and I continue to be impressed with the high caliber work and dedication of city employees at all levels, despite decreasing funding and increasing costs. Many line items found ways to cut back, defer, or sustain at present levels, and to be expected, others did increase or necessarily were added to the list. Overall, I find the proposed budget acceptable, and I am grateful for the hard work it achieves. I'll specifically mention four items that the public has been noting. First, East City Park stage. Obviously, it can't be built for what it was many decades ago. Stage use these days exceeds the number of uses and technical complexity than before. The new build will address a number of issues and honor the total value of the former stage and has considered public input. The park has earned a showcase the stage represents and attracts income for the town. Two, climate mitigation. I encourage the city to continue exploring potentials for city and community solar projects and conservation, increase city ops electrification, and further fuel reduction savings. Three, affordable housing, a very complex national issue that cannot be solved at the city level. Rash or short-sighted decisions will exacerbate the problem. Runaway development can displace or devalue current residents' home investments and town character. So be creative, wise, and fair to avert any net loss on multiple levels. Making progress in phases toward fixing up and revitalizing the downtown streetscape is materially necessary, like safety, economically advantageous. And it can significantly contribute to our cultural experiences and regional identity.
We hear what goes on in East City Park, we can't get away from it. But it is, and I could be here complaining about that, but I'm not, because the arts and culture in this city are important, and I want to express my support for keeping that in the budget. I think we've heard some concerns here about allocation and priorities, and I understand all of that, and I certainly am sympathetic to those concerns. But it is a way too easy a solution to say, oh, well, let's just cut the arts. Who really needs that anyway? It's just aesthetics. Well, the quality of our life in this town and the value of our property in this town and the economic benefit that this town gets from bringing people in for arts events and to participate in what Moscow has to offer are benefits that may be difficult to quantify, but they are no less important.
One of the people who gave neutral comments on the proposed budget was Kathy Dawes, who is a Democratic candidate for House Seat 6B in the state legislature, challenging incumbent Republican Brandon Mitchell of Moscow.
I truly do support the arts here and feel that we should be. And I also understand the concerns about safety, public safety. And I want to point out that with the police officer reductions, the forensic detective position being terminated, that the street funding has been down, is all due to the state decisions at the legislative level. the point I'm really trying to make is that this council is under a lot of restrictions that have been placed on them by our legislature. And I admire your ability to do the best you can to put together a budget that is minimally increasing our costs and trying to maintain the character of our city. And I thank you.
That was Kathy Dawes. Council members said they support the budget that they have worked on for months and also said they support building the East City Park stage. They passed the budget 5-1, with Councilmember Evan Holmes voting against because he wanted to remove the $137,000 for the Parks Master Plan from the budget for reconsideration. The council also held a public hearing on the city's fee increases and voted to increase a number of fees.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Moscow Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center, a nonprofit organization dedicated to bringing commerce and community together through business support, local events, and economic development initiatives. 114 South Main Street in downtown Moscow, 208-882-1800, and moscowchamber.com. Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Idaho Chapter and Palouse Group of the Sierra Club, which are building a grassroots movement for climate and ecological justice in Idaho. Sierra Club empowers community members of all ages to advocate for clean energy, abundant wildlife, and outdoor access. sierraclub.org/Idaho/Palouse-group.
This is Hell, and I'm the Bitter, Blind, Broke, Gaptooth radio show host Chuck Mertz, who tells you that right here on KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, 90.3 FM, and KRFP.org at 11 a.m. each and every Sunday morning. This is Hell has been manufacturing dissent since 1996, bringing listeners like you the news that scares the news as an alternative to alternative radio, independent from independent media, and KRFP is one of only a few outlets around the world that supports our work. In today's political climate, that support is more important than ever to fight against the damage done by corporate-controlled right-wing media that has taken over the public's airwaves. In the past year, This Is Hell has talked about issues you will not hear on corporate or even public radio, like neoliberalism, feminism, sexism, racism, conservatism, cannibalism, and the meaning of infinity. If that's the kind of programming you want to hear, see you on Sunday morning.
The Center for Biological Diversity has submitted a petition to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to protect a flowering plant called the Washington Jacob's Ladder under the Endangered Species Act. The two scientists who wrote the petition say the plant, which lives in central Washington, mostly north of Interstate 90, is at risk of extinction because there are only 3 or 4 populations remaining that are likely to continue reproducing into the future. One of the scientists, University of Washington Burke Museum researcher Mark Derich, told the Spokesman Review the plant with purple flowers has a limited range of habitats where it can survive. The plant requires moisture and bare soil. Derich said the biggest factor overall, I think, has been the loss of groundwater because there's so much groundwater that's being pumped out of that area for irrigation. The locations with abundant groundwater and bare soil in central Washington include floodplains, which have been disappearing as farmers straighten streams, Derich said. So during spring floods that might occur, or particularly large rainstorms that might occur on occasion, those floodplains really aren't there anymore. Derich said he and another field worker conducted a population survey of Washington Jacob's Ladder recently and found most populations that did not have bare soil did not produce enough younger plants to keep the population viable, and those areas now mostly consist of very old zombie plants that will just live out their lifespan and then die along with the local population. Center for Biological Diversity staff researcher Gwendolyn McManus, who is the other researcher who wrote the petition, said if the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service grants protection to the Washington Jacob's Ladder, it will unlock funding for its protection. McManus said it can also help raise awareness for landowners who have those plants on their land, and in some cases can help landowners get additional help if they want to conserve the plants. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service currently recognizes 892 flowering plants as endangered species. The new petition for endangered species status comes at a time when the Center for Biological Diversity is suing the Trump administration over its new plan to open 24 million acres of federal land in the West to cattle grazing, where grazing was previously not allowed. That lawsuit says cattle grazing in essential habitats will harm threatened species such as grizzly bears and gray wolves, which ranchers often kill when conflicts arise between them and domesticated animals. The lawsuit says the new grazing areas are also crucial to the survival of Oregon spotted frogs, Snake River Basin steelhead, Colorado pike minnow, Mexican spotted owls, and western yellow-billed cuckoos.
An Oregon nonprofit is putting young people to work outside all summer in hopes of inspiring more to pursue a career in natural resources. For decades, the sector has been struggling to replace retiring professionals like geoscientists and foresters. Jacob Losby is with Wallawa Resources, which runs the 8-week paid summer internship called the High School Apprenticeship Work Program, or HAWK, in Wallawa County. He says it offers young people a broad survey of potential careers.
85% of their time is out in the field, actually working alongside professionals. We do everything from rangeland management and noxious weeds to fish and wildlife to forestry. This year, we added some GIS training.
Losby says this summer's program just wrapped up, earning participants college credits through Treasure Valley Community College. He adds the program also focuses on professional development like goal setting, leadership, and job hunting skills. 16-year-old Katie Hellinger was part of this year's HAWK internship program. She says one of her favorite parts was learning about fish and wildlife biology. The group practiced electrofishing for salmon using a device that creates an electric current in the water.
And then the fish are attracted to the electric current, and then you just scoop them up with a net. And we were putting pit tags in those fish so we could track them.
Fish biologists tag salmon to track migration routes, measure survival rates, and protect endangered populations. Hellinger says she's not sure if she wants to pursue work in natural resources after high school, but she would recommend the HAWK program to anyone who's curious to learn about the possibilities.
It's a really good experience. You get to work outside all summer. It really helped me to narrow down choices for possible future careers.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather for the Moscow Pullman area, mostly clear tonight and tomorrow, low 50, high 93. Partly cloudy Thursday night, low 54. Mostly sunny and hot, high 97 on Friday. Mostly cloudy, low 58 Friday night, and a 20% chance of showers Saturday afternoon. Otherwise, partly sunny Saturday, high 88. Currently 84 degrees. Real-time air monitoring shows the air quality at this hour in north-central Idaho and the Panhandle is moderate. Air quality at this hour in Pullman and Spokane is moderate. Air quality at this hour in Clarkston is unhealthy for sensitive groups. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP and the public affairs shows and the recordings of public meetings, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Coming up next, Flashpoints, Lockdown Mosh Pit, 7:30 to 8:30, and at 8:30, Grateful Dead Through the Decades with Arlene. syndicated music from Brazil with Boss of Brazil on at 10.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.